My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This week in the news, Monday Night Raw goes to 2 hours. In the lazy river of wrestling criticism, Ice Cold takes on All Out and Invader Club. Masa Saito, Shinya Hashimoto, and Koji Kitao versus Big Van Vader, Bam Bam Bigelow, and Steve Williams. Hose me.
It is indeed. In terms of a trio, I would not want to stand on the other side of the ring against Big Van Vader, Bam Bam Bigelow, and Steve Williams. Terrifying trio.
Oh, I enjoyed this. This is what I needed after this week. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Chris Novembrito. I'm Jeff Hawkins. He's Chris Novembrito. You want to be Jeff and I can be Chris for the week?
I don't know. Are you ready? Are you ready for the levels of paranoia that get validated and thus deepen?
Oh, are you ready for the levels of paranoia that go on in this brain? The rapture's coming. No,
all my neighbors are spying on me. I know this because I have memorandum saying so.
That's true. You have your neighbors who hate you.
I literally have it in writing.
Hates me.
That my neighbors are all spying on me, hate me, and want me to leave.
I have a bunch of message board geeks who are probably writing to my work again, telling me I'm unfit for the job or something.
But, well, this is why I could never care about message board trolls right now, is because I have neighbors right next door to me who hate me. Why would I care about some strangers on the internet? My trolls are local.
That's very, very true. Rest in peace to James Earl Jones and Will Jennings, who is interesting for my musical formation. Some of you will know him as the lyricist for, say, Eric Clapton's Tears in Heaven and Celine Dion's My Heart Will Go On. But for me, he was the lyricist for 5 solo Steve Winwood albums. So, you know, back in the high life, roll with it. All that boomer rock that your parents probably listened to and stuff that I had to listen to.
Back in the high life again.
Yep. And Warren Zevon does an excellent cover of that as well. The hell with it. Let's get to the news. I can't do any more paranoid thinking. Otherwise, I might become you, Chris. That might be the problem. I feel for you because it's like my actual physical neighbors as opposed to just my community doesn't like me. Monday Night Raw going to 2 hours starting on October 7th until its final show on USA on December 30th. Yes, thank you. The plan for Netflix is to be determined. This is Dave Meltzer from The Wrestling Observer. It was noted that a normal Raw at 3 hours is 132 minutes, so you can have the same content in a 2.5-hour show with less commercial time. There will be commercials on Netflix, as one of the reasons Netflix picked up Raw is because they are trying to add commercials to programming. Boo you. And the Raw and pro wrestling audience is used to commercials on the shows, but they can adjust a lot differently than on regular television, such as when and how the breaks are and not have the show to the second when it comes to that. God, that's a long sentence, Dave. The time can also adjust as if they need longer to tell the story or want to go shorter, et cetera, et cetera. The idea is the length can change so the time frame of the main event finishes can be less predictable. This is on Netflix. The reason the change is October 7th is because the contract with USA, which calls for three-hour shows, ends at the end of September, and the new deal they signed for the last 3 months before Netflix started was for a two-hour show. This was the week where all three of the major WWE shows were on USA, as SmackDown debuted last night on the channel as well. Chris, any thoughts about a two-hour? Can they possibly get everything in that they have planned in 2 hours?
So, like, there's a number of things going on in this story. The two-hour Raw for the towards the end of the year, I think, will make good, faster shows, tighter shows in what is normally silly season. So, yeah. I welcome this. This should have been a thing for years.
Long ago,
because they always mentally check out on the writing between this time anyway. So why not cut down how much writing you're obligated towards? Give your people more time for families during the holiday season while lightening the workload without actually taking a full week off from any show. You reduce the workload by a third towards the end of the year. I think it's just better for the pace of the company while still keeping business and everything else going.
We're going from a Golden Corral buffet to a Vegas buffet.
Yeah, and it should tighten up the content as well.
Well, it should.
Yeah, it should. It will it? Will it is an open question. But now, when we get to Netflix, for Netflix users, boy, I worry that y'all are about to enter a dark era where commercials have once again arrived back on television, that we are going to be telling our kids about the good old days when Netflix was really, really wide-ranging in terms of its library, and there was nothing to really stop you, especially if you had a VPN, from watching everything from The Office to pretty much anything that was on TV. To now I am forced to sit through commercials whether I want to or not, despite the fact that I pay $13.99 for this service.
Cheap garbage foreign programming and bad documentaries where it's always the government, and go back to DVDs. That's what I really want out of Netflix. But I don't want my
Netflix of 2010.
Yeah, that's true.
All I want. I just want my 2010 Netflix. I want all of The Office. I want to be able to use a VPN and get into Canadian Netflix or United Kingdom Netflix and have access to everything.
Can we no longer do that with a VPN? Do they block it?
I think you can, but like Netflix has less licenses now. Back in those days, Netflix had friggin' everything.
They had Friends, and then everybody decided they wanted to get into streaming and monetize that.
Right.
TKO president Mark Shapiro states that WWE will be cutting down on live events even more next year, and explains taking on less of the marginally profit of events. Quote, what we're doing is cutting events at WWE. So we're taking our low marginal, marginally profitable events, untelevised events that Vince McMahon had put in place to grow the brand, right? You're taking the show on the road, and we got to go to every city we can get to grow the WWE brand. Well, the WWE brand, while we still have to grow it, it's on fire right now, so we don't need to carry these marginally profitable events. So what was 300 events last year will be roughly 250 this year, and next year will be close to 200. I get his point of view because, yes, I agree. There's so much television wrestling right now. You don't really need house shows, to be honest with you. That said, you watch all this young talent in like AEW, and even the talented WWE who was brought up way too early from NXT, they need those house shows in some way. I mean, if you're only doing that, like only wrestling once a week and maybe in like a 3 minute squash, like you're, we'll get to this later. She's on the miscellaneous list now, 'cause I think she's injured, but Kiana James, who, you know, has not really worked a lot. Let's put it this way. She did NXT and she was great. She had the character and she was over delivering in NXT, but she hasn't really learned to work a long match, so to speak, other than something choreographed. You kind of need that. I mean, my idea would be for AEW, to run a bunch of high school gyms and not call it AEW necessarily, but with the talent and work a circuit and work local promos and figure out what to do with these guys with like Private Party and Top Flight and guys who have been on the roster for 6 years and haven't improved all that much. I don't know. But from the WWE perspective, this seems like a smart idea to me, Chris. And also, by the way, those events that they are running are going to get more expensive because, hey, we've been having quick sellouts. That means the tickets cost too little. We can raise the prices. Your thoughts?
So I'm going to go another way on this. The easy joke on this is it's a big hit for the Shelbyville, North Haverbrook, and Ogdenvilles of the world. But going the other way of looking at this, I think, is if indeed WWE's brand is on fire right now, then it should be fairly easy to send C-level developing talent that needs time out to work a show, and you have, call it Stars of WWE or something like that, where, you know, you basically have the WWE branding on it, but it's clear that this is not like Raw or SmackDown or anything. It's just a Stars of WWE show. And you just set up a ring, basic lighting schema.
They have those now, and they're few and far between. They're also mostly in big cities, which is so weird to me.
I know. So run these in like a guerrilla sort of way. I mean, this should be something that you should be able to fit into one truck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have one truck of material, the ring, the lighting, the sound, whatever. It all fits into one truck. And you drive in your talent in a bus, and you work a short show, 2 hour show or whatever, give some people long matches, a self-contained little angle involving Kiana James or, you know,
she's always the example we're going to use.
Well, you mentioned her before,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So like, and she actually would be good, right? You have a show long angle where Kiana James comes out, says something, and then we're building to a main event or whatever. And you give her a chance essentially to do an open show promo, a close of show before the main event promo, and build like an angle and intrigue, and then work a 20-minute match. You wouldn't need that many people, maybe a bus worth of people, 16 people, and then a truck. This should be a bus and a truck show.
I would agree. I usually don't do these types of things, but I'm going to on this one because I have a bit of a rant in me. Kevin Nash on his podcast talking about Logan Paul and saying he makes too much money, doesn't work house shows, which is disrespectful to the boys, and doesn't know the insider lingo of wrestling enough. And I'm here
Wait. That's the problem with Logan Paul. That's the problem. That's the problem with Logan Paul.
You know, I
Paul.
Set these things up for you just so you can hit them out of the park. I'm gonna go a different way this time. Kevin Nash, who famously put in his contract, I'm only gonna work a certain number of house shows. And then once you had used those up, sometimes even wouldn't show up to the ones he was booked at. This is what you walked so others can run looks like. This is what drives me nuts. Here's some things you guys need to know. Number one, old athletes, when they say, yeah, we're going on strike so that the younger guys can have it better than us, they're never happy with when the younger guys have it better than them. You'll still hear Charles Barkley complaining that guys get big money contracts these days. And,
oh, they're so bitter. They're so bitter that guys do the same work and are making that much more money because guys like Barkley and Jordan upped their market value of athletic performance to get it closer to what they're actually owed. It's so funny. In one breath, you can go, wow, it's crazy that teams take so much money. Another breath, as that parity is closed in, isn't it obvious that athletes doing the same work would make more money than you because you're correcting the error?
Well, I'm going to get – this is also just a bigger part of show business in many ways, and even professional athletics, which is
but
show
Nash,
business.
But Nash, really, to your point about Nash, legendary sandbagger.
Yes.
Absolute legendary sandbagger. I don't think that he needs to be weighing in on this. And if anything, I think WWE was very, very clever and how they quietly cut ties with Logan Paul as Logan Paul's legal problems ramped up. The much more obvious critique to me of Logan Paul is that he's a liability to have on a high platform because he seems to keep getting himself into trouble over and over and over again. And WWE is sort of cruising for a bruising by having this guy highly elevated and relevant, because you don't want to have to Odyssey Jones him.
True. I'm going to go into a little bit about the culture of show business, because I was having a conversation with a former screenwriter as well on this. Well, current screenwriter, he teaches screenwriting, but it's all celebrities have to have the struggle in them in terms of how they got famous. It's always, they have their struggle story, but they also, as we alluded to earlier, they're not grateful for what they have. I mean, that's about 10%. 90% are bitter about what they didn't get. You'll still hear Shaq complaining he got passed over for two MVPs on Inside the NBA. There's a personal story to this too. I at one of these improv festivals when I used to do those, I sat down, I had a nice chat for 45 minutes with someone who is now on a press junket for a television show that they've created. And, you know, we talked about LA and what the scene was out there. And within like about a year after this conversation, they got a writing gig on Saturday Night Live. Then they got cast on a show recurring, which allowed them to also direct a few episodes and get into the guild there, even though this person had no directing experience whatsoever. And I'm reading all these interviews with this person, and it's all about, well, you know, I wasn't given the opportunities that a lot of other people were given. I'm like, I got news for you. Number one, show business and professional sports and everything is a struggle for everybody. It's not like any, I mean, yeah, even the Nepo babies are given something. I get that. But at the same time, you know, it's like they're still bitter, even though they've had this huge career trajectory and they have their own show, and they still want to tell you, you know, I'm angry I had to wait tables for a couple years before I got my big break, etc., etc. And you're just like, guys, you got the brass ring, enjoy it a little bit, be thankful. I mean, a couple people will know this, but I have a friend who's a double Ivy who complains to me and is depressed that, you know, oh, I didn't get the opportunities a lot of people I went to school with. I'm just like, dude, you could walk into anywhere and be their boss's boss if you wanted to. And it's amazing how your negativity, and I've suffered from this too when I was still in the game. I was always angry about, you know, so-and-so got this and I didn't get that. Everything about fame runs on negativity. And how you didn't get more than the other guy who came after you. It's so weird to me at times. I mean, Shaq's making buku bucks because he'll plug anything there is, but you watch him on like Inside the NBA at times, he's just like, yeah, I got passed over for two MVPs, not just one. It's I wasn't on the dream team. You know, he's still holding that to him. It's like,
okay, you sucked on the Phoenix Suns, Shaq. Sit down. You went to the Phoenix Suns and were terrible.
I think Nash actually just wants a program with Logan Paul, so he hit the check. That'd be a hell of a match, wouldn't it? I want to go over to Triple H. Don't make me job to the kid.
God. No, I don't have anything for Kevin
cool.
Nash.
We'll
yeah.
move on. Motor City Machine Guns, Fightful has confirmed that they have signed with WWE. I assume that they will probably be debuting on NXT on the CW in the coming weeks. Not the biggest fans of the Motor City Machine Guns. I know a lot of people love them. I'm like, okay, they're good. They'll yeah. be NXT, you know,
yeah.
as that veteran tag team, putting people through the motions and stuff like that.
Look, they're an alternative to Gallus, Jeff.
No,
that's a meaningful.
No more. Yeah. As stated before, Kiana James off the active roster, put on the miscellaneous list. She got a leg injury in that triple threat match for the Money in the Bank. But it's kind of unusual that you put her on the miscellaneous list as opposed to just keeping her on the Raw list. And the excuse for the Street Profits not being on NXT, or the Street Profits being on NXT this week, is that Trey Miguel had minor surgery on Sunday, which necessitated the tag match change. I saw some speculation that maybe Ava is somehow bloodline related. I thought that would have been kind of cool to do, but we don't need any more heel commissioners in wrestling. Anything on either of those? You can say no.
No, I don't think we don't need Ava to do no. a whole lot more in terms of characterization.
We
I
don't
think
need her to do anything, quite frankly. We already have Stevie and Rob, so we don't need her.
I think we have explored the possibilities of Ava in all aspects. And
what, you don't think there's another deep character arc?
There's nothing there. She's not a great commissioner. She's not a great heel. She's not a great babyface. She's not a great screen presence. Yeah, she's just there, and it's on the name.
Ratings this week, just some quick notes. AEW was over 700,000, but down in the demo. Collision 137,000, or maybe I mistyped that. It might be 173. Either way, it was low this weekend. Raw did 1.43 million going up against the premiere of Monday Night Football, so it got hurt. But the surprising one was NXT over there, the little engine that could, doing 628,000 against The Debate, which everybody it seemed watched, except for me. I didn't watch it.
I actually did manage to watch about an hour of it.
God yeah. bless.
Yeah, I mean, I watched an hour of it and then clicked off and went back to playing video games. I understood what was and was not happening.
Yes,
NXT was good. And like, look, I think especially with the election, you kind of know what you're gonna do. Like, it's weird to me to hear anyone who's undecided. So maybe more people are gonna watch TV.
Got 70 million people watching that thing.
Really?
It's interesting. I think so, yeah.
Wow.
They want $1 million for this NXT premiere on CW. I don't know if they get there. I just can't see that almost doubling the audience.
I mean, they are bringing in CM Punk.
And The Miz.
Dude, that's a big get. You know, going back to one story prior, the TNA relationship has been really good for NXT and TNA.
Yes.
I think that this is a good brand synergy. And another thing that WWE, I guess, could do if they're getting rid of the house shows, tying in another backstory, is just have more people on TNA.
It's interesting because half the people they're sending have been in TNA before.
I know. It's weird to send them.
It's kind of odd in some ways. I you know, it's like they just had Wendy Chu fighting Jordan Grace over there. You know, and you know, they did the thing. I sent you this with they have Ariana Grace over in TNA, and of course her father is the commissioner over there, Santino Marella, and they finally met, which it's as stupid as it sounds, and it was lovely. I liked it. But that'll do it for the news. Now into the lazy river of wrestling criticism, where whatever we watched, whatever we had time for. I did get to see All Out. Chris did not. So I'm just going to go through some things and he can tell me about what he heard and whatnot. Very good show for the most part. It kind of ended weird. If I had to put the second half of this show in perspective, it felt like one of those latter stage ECW shows when ECW just turned into people doing hardcore matches and they didn't mean anything, really, because that's what it kind of felt like to me. I thought MJF and Daniel Garcia had a great match, although interesting that MJF again beat Daniel Garcia by pinfall, because Daniel Garcia is not re-signed with AEW, so we can't do anything with him until he signs a contract. Bucks and BCC over-delivered for what I thought it was going to be. The Bucks are good. Get over it, Jim Cornette. Will Ospreay and Pac was sublime. I mean, that was the match of the show. And of course, I mean, those two, I mean, if you like modern wrestling and that style and the choreographed stuff, it was very, very good. Statlander and Willow Nightingale had a hell of a street fight. Really did. and I think Willow should just become a brawler. Like, when you watch Willow Nightingale wrestle, there can be some struggle sometimes there. I think she should just be female Eddie Kingston. Just have her come out and just brawl with people. Why not?
Brawl, 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 occasional suplex, occasional yes. like power move or whatever, just to keep it looking like a wrestling match, but mostly brawling, punching, kicking, you know, clubbering.
Okada and Mercedes both won their matches. We expected that to happen. And then we had this Bryan Danielson, Jack Perry match, which was okay. It was nothing necessarily to write home about. Jack Perry, you know, Bryan carried old Jack to a good match. And then we had this turn by the BCC after Christian comes down supposedly to cash in his contract for a match. BCC turns, Claudio uppercuts him to stuff, and then John Moxley comes down with a plastic bag and tries to choke, basically tries to choke Bryan Danielson to death. And what this is a callback to is in 1989 in the NWA, Terry Funk came back during, I think it was Music City Showdown, and challenged Ric Flair, but he was retired, quote unquote. He had been gone for a couple of years. And he was actually in Japan, but he wasn't in the NWA. Or he was last seen in WWF, of all things. But he was one of the judges for this match. And he goes, hey, we have a ranking system. You're not ranked. So Terry Funk took and drove him through a table. Well, came back, you know, Flair came back. They had a match at the Great American Bash where Gary Hart was revealed to now be managing Terry Funk. And this led eventually to a match that was scheduled for a tag match between Funk and Muda versus Sting and Flair. Well, Terry Funk had an infection in his arm that was getting worse and worse, and he never wanted to get it fixed because he was top-lining house shows and making a lot of money. But Gary Hart says, hey, look, I'm taking you to the hospital. You have to go to this. So he was replaced by Dick Slater. And if anybody knows Dick Slater, Dick Slater's basically doing a Terry Funk impression in the ring. It's a great match. It's Clash of the Champions 12, I believe. But Funk was released from the hospital, and he and Gary Hart come up with this idea with the plastic bag to choke out Ric Flair. Ric Flair apparently didn't know about it. And he was literally fighting for his life after wrestling a long tag match with Muda and Slater. And this almost ended up costing TBS their television contract, or the television contract with TBS with the NWA at the time. There was a lot of outrage about this. It was cut from any future broadcasts.
Didn't Terry Funk have to go on TV and apologize for it?
Yes, Terry Funk had to go on TV and apologize, and he couldn't understand this either because he originally had to like apologize to Flair for the promos he was cutting in the buildup for the Great American Bash. But yes, he had to go on TV and apologize to the fans for going too far with the plastic bag. And as Ric Flair may have been embellishing, but Ric Flair says he was literally fighting for his life because he wasn't expecting this. As it was basically Flair and Hart or Funkin' Hart's idea, and he had never been privy to it. So take that for what you will. So Moxley comes out and kind of does the same thing here with Danielson.
Yeah, so can I ask you, was there anything explicit on this show or Dynamite that said that the Bucks and Moxley were in cahoots?
No.
So that's
so
the
why is the company being healed here?
I'm confused by several little beats yes. in this story here. Because, like, for example, the BCC didn't come out and make the save during the match when Perry was going for the title. And that would make good sense if Moxley had a deal with the Bucks or whatever, but it's very clear that Moxley wants the title for himself. That's why he's going up against Darby Allin. And we could talk about the utter brain genius that is Darby Allin here in just a moment.
We will.
But like, I'm confused how the Bucks storyline and the BCC storyline intersect in this. At once, it was very dramatic, but then when I stopped and like thought about it, I was confused. They make a visual stand to defend Danielson. They, however, did put themselves in a situation with the interference from the Bucks, where the Bucks, the Elite, could get the title, and that would be counter to what appears to be the BCC's goal here. They not only want to beat up Brian Danielson, they also want to get the title. But then I'm also confused by what they mean when they say diplomacy has failed. That literally has no meaning to me in this case, other than we were going up against the Bucks and you weren't ruthless enough against them.
This is what it feels like to me, because they said, I mean, Moxley literally said, this company is run by egos, blah, 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 blah. So they're healing the company, which is run by quote unquote heels, allegedly, except for Christopher Daniels and Tony Khan, because we don't really know of all that. To me, Chris, I think they're going to babyface the Elite, which makes no sense.
No sense.
So we're doing a weird heel on heel feud, and I don't see that being the case in any.
It's weird. I think basically they'll get to the Elite being baby faces on the back of Okada saying the word bitch over and over and over again. Because other than that, I don't know what they have done in the last year to get the fans to cheer for them, other than the fact that the fans are a little too willing to go along with these stories sometimes.
We don't know if Nigel's involved in this whole story with the BCC either, because it's like, okay, so we have Nigel, we have Moxley, we have Claudio, we have Pac, and we have Marina Shafir. What do they all have in common? All were in NXT at one time. Shane McMahon's coming.
It's theoretically, you've got a lot of characters and players who would be great for this Bryan Danielson storyline, but I now find myself really scratching my head about who's doing what and why. And we didn't even get into Christian. So, it's crazy. It's a bit wild to have this many characters all happening at once with no clear direction.
And then for the main event of All Out, it was a lights out steel cage match where a lot of people were squeamish about the violence. I wasn't squeamish about the violence so much as I didn't think the violence made sense in the story of a cage match. I get that Swerve Strickland has used a cinder block with Keith Lee. I don't understand why you'd bring it into the cage with you necessarily, because it's not a great weapon to use, and it can be used against yourself, which it was. People really did. They took power bombs off of, or they took moves at least. I don't know if it was a power bomb, but there were a couple of flat back bumps onto a concrete block, Chris, which is not smart. You had Adam Page pull out a hypodermic and stick it in Swerve's cheek. Now, look, if it has a sedative or something that's going to put him to sleep so that Adam Page can then win the match, makes sense to me. If you're doing it just to look cool, it doesn't. The cage should be enough, really. And maybe one weapon. Maybe go the Tully Magnum minimalist and go, hey, a wooden chair is broken in here. Maybe just take the wooden stake. They had a wooden stake in this too from the
house. One steel chair inside of a steel cage.
Yes.
Now everyone's fighting over the steel chair, and who has control of the steel chair is relevant. So you have the cage as a weapon to try to equalize, but the chair puts someone on the attack and someone on the defense. I'm with you on this. Too many weapons. Everyone's just on offense. Like, you don't have predator and prey. You just have two predators charging at each other, and that's not nearly as exciting.
There's no struggle in terms of life and death. It's just, let's hit you with something bigger this time type of a thing. And then eventually, you know, I mean, I think everybody thought there was going to be something fire-related in this match, and there wasn't. This is what you get when you start escalating things to this effect. You know, you start thinking about these things and what would make sense in a story. I mean, it was good for what it was, but it was just like, again, to me, it made me feel cold, like post ECW after it had been rated all talent, where it's just, you know, mediocre guys hitting each other with stuff. That's what ECW became.
Like, right. Hitting each other with stuff is what you do when you're just being honest here, not a good wrestler. That's at least kind of what I grew up with. Yeah. I grew up with guys in ECW who, on the merits, were not guys who could work 10 to 12 minute matches that were competent. So they had to get by hitting each other with cookie sheets and falling through tables and doing other ridiculous crap to get by through those 10 minutes to keep an audience entertained. But those matches had no staying power. At the end, I don't remember Rocco Rock going through this table or that table. He just went through a lot of tables.
He just went through tables.
Yeah, like, yeah, right? You know,
I think Gangster's Paradise was the best one of that, but that was actually mid-90s when ECW was still good. He, you know, went through two tables from on top of a cage or something to that effect, but yeah.
And even New Jack, right? Like, New Jack, guy, not a great wrestler, ends up, like, having to do things that nearly effing kill himself. And basically, like, you know, slowly do destroy his body through the years. Like, he loses vision in one eye and stuff, you know, RIP New Jack, but like,
he almost kills Vic Grimes in XPW, you know, when he throws him off of a scaffolding through
right.
a bunch of tables. Yeah.
Yeah. There's that. I mean, you know, there's also the mass transit incident. I mean, like this to me. I'm not dogging all hardcore wrestling that's ever been done ever. I just want to be clear. Like, for me, the backdrop of hardcore wrestling through my childhood was, this is what you do when you're not in great shape. You want to wrestle in t-shirt and jeans and womp each other and then do a sloppy ass DDT onto a cookie sheet.
Your turn, sir.
Okay. Other than that,
did you enjoy the play, Mrs. Lincoln?
Well, I was unable to see the show. I was telling you this beforehand. Yeah. Normally I have no problem, getting access to these shows ex post facto, but this time it appears that AEW has been a little bit more diligent about the copyright and everything. And I just think that maybe, I mean, one, obviously they need to protect their intellectual property. Two, it's interesting that it happened on this show when it seems like there was a lot of violent stuff that they – I don't think AEW does a show with needles and cinder blocks and that kind of stuff again. I think this is probably the last time we see this. Some of the statements – were obviously worked, but I think behind the work was an element of truth that maybe the main event got a little bit more carnival than they were sort of expecting.
Go into something on one of the shows. We're done with this now, I think.
Go into something on one of the shows here. All right. Recap here of... Oh, yeah, Bret Hart. Made his triumphant return to Raw this week.
Hey, remember when he was on AEW television?
God. Bret Hart talking about Canadian champions for a few. We just got to be done with him, right? Like, Bret's a vibe.
Bret's taking the check.
Yeah, Bret's a vibe, but Bret is not a promo anymore.
Bret was never a promo. This is what kills me about him. Well, he was.
He has moments. He has his moments.
I get this, but still, the best part of wrestling with shadows is when he goes, you know, I was thinking about being an actor. I'm like, dude.
No, hell, I know. I know.
Yeah, but man, you can't help but love the sly grin on both their faces when Gunther says the Goldberg line. My favorite wrestler, Bill Goldberg.
Oh.
And even Brett's corpsing on that one.
honestly, is good, because over the last several years, Bret Hart's obsession with Goldberg has reached Moby Dick-like levels. And obviously, Goldberg kicking Bret in the head was a career-ending injury. Bret was also, I believe, 40 or 41 at that point. It wasn't like he was going to be doing a lot more after that.
And Brett will tell you all about Brett, part of that bitter thing.
And then he had the stroke, and
I don't begrudge him that at all.
I don't think that had anything to do with Goldberg. I think, you know, like, there were other things that happened to him in his 40s that were going to end his career regardless. Yes. And most wrestlers' careers, especially in that generation, were wrapped up by the time they were in their early 40s. So this was not like, it's not like Bill Goldberg, not a great guy to work with. Bill Goldberg used to wallop and potato people all over the place. So this is not an in defense of Bill Goldberg, but I think Brett needs to be a little more realistic about how much Bill actually took from him.
Yeah.
It's less than what he makes it out to be.
I would somewhat agree with that. What are we going to do with the Wyatt Six now that they've absolutely decimated American Made and they need another heel group to go after?
I hate that. Like, more importantly, what are we going to do with American Made now that they got absolutely decimated by the Wyatt Six?
That's true, too. I just like, okay, that's something. You want to go next or you want me to?
Man, I am glad that we are starting to get Jey Uso into the mix with the Terror Twins, because the Terror Twins in and of themselves are not enough. And Jey Uso, I think, is going to be a much needed third piece of chemistry to make this like equation work. I think I'm bullish on this. I think Priest and Uso will find a synergy, with Uso being a little bit more of the wacky man and Priest being a little bit more of the straight man. Yeah. And like the dynamic with
Uso,
Rhea,
basically playing a horn dog about Rhea and Priest trying to keep him in line.
Right. And, you know, like trying to watch out for, you know, basically he's a little skeptical about him.
Yeah.
And like there's enough here to spice this up, because Priest and Rhea are boring as just themselves. So I think Uso will give them the charisma injection. I worry more about the Judgment Day piece of this, in that Balor's kind of boring as the main mouthpiece, and
yes,
the company seems to be scared to do what we all know needs to be done, which is focus the story more on Carlito.
Oh, you got me on that one.
I think the facts speak for themselves on this one, Jeffrey. The Judgment Day,
we're Balor kinda... McDonough are just dull.
Right.
I'm sorry, they are. They're red
they
shirts.
Are. They are dull. Dominic, we've seen this movie before.
Yes.
So in order for this to be interesting now, I think it's got to be Liv Morgan and Balor doing stuff.
Yes.
If we are not going to take the brave and bold step of moving the story through Carlito, as we should, it's got to be Balor and Morgan then. They're the only two possible pieces.
I would agree there. I watched the debut of SmackDown on USA, and it was a solid show. Started with a cage match between Solo and Cody, and it turned into, of course, the Bloodline coming in. Then Roman came out, took out everybody, and then it ended at the end with Cody and Roman signing a contract to go up against Jacob Fatu and Solo. So, you know, some strong business there. And also, this week's MVP in WWE may have been Chelsea Green. You know, she was doing the hardcore stuff.
She makes people look so good. Everyone she works with, she sells her ass off for them. She is willing to take crazy bumps, like the ones with Julia. I mean, trusting your body in some of those situations, and Julia's first match to help get Julia over. Dude, what a pro.
Yeah, really, and this was the wrong opponent for Julia's first match, because they had to give Chelsea some stuff. Just get a local person, let Julia do her moveset, get a pin, and teach us who Julia is, and then build to your gatekeeper match with Chelsea Green. That's all you had to do here.
You know why you need someone like Chelsea, though, versus a local talent, is in order to do some of those spots, they have to know how to take them.
Yes.
And so that's why I'm saying,
Julia works a bit stiff. Let's put it that way.
She works a bit stiff. Chelsea does her homework, probably watched these matches and was familiar, and also could help call the match, too, and guide the match. She's a really valuable asset for this company right now.
And also on this SmackDown, Carmelo Hayes and Andrade killed themselves again. These two just, I mean, they did a Spanish fly off of that, you know, that area where everybody crashes through to go to the timekeeper's table, the one collapsible panel there. They did a Spanish fly off of there, and it looked like Carmelo and Andrade both landed wrong on their shoulders in some way. I mean, these two guys beat the crap out of each other.
Whenever they've needed it, whenever they need an entertaining match on SmackDown this last year, it's just been, let's get Carmelo and Andrade doing something with somebody.
Yeah, and it's going to be Carmelo or Andrade and LA Knight in a U.S. title match, I think, next week. We'll see about that. Your turn, sir.
Let's go back, I guess, to...
You want me to remind you to do Darby, or do you want to do something else here?
Yeah, you know what? Let's talk a little Darby Allin here. Why would Darby Allin just give up a title shot to Jon Moxley with nothing in exchange? I get being willing to put the title shot on the line. Now, the title's an important thing. It should matter to everyone in the company. But Darby Allin's a man with heart. He's got soul. He has passions and beliefs. He's passionate about those beliefs. And so I can understand a scenario wherein Darby Allin might go, you know what? There's something bigger than the title right now. What the hell is that, Jeff? What would that be?
The soul... The meaning of what AEW means to all these young corporate fealty.
There's not a thing right now out there that is, to go back to like an old James Bond line, which one will it be, James, the girl or the mission? Like there's not an alternative to the title here right. That is as worthy. So Darby has no reason other than to be laser focused on this title shot. He might not like Jon Moxley, but there's no reason to put this thing on the line against Mox.
No.
And at the end of the show, when Nigel McGuinness is now inserted into a title match against Bryan Danielson, it made Darby Allin look like a complete jackass.
Yes.
Just a jackass.
He's, you know... Brian's indisposed or unavailable for to wrestle, so it's going to be us at, okay, fine, they decided to change this for some reason, blah, 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 and then they, Nigel's first match in 15 years against Bryan Danielson or a real, you know, it's like, okay.
And Danielson's got to be watching all this stuff going down between Darby and Moxley, so, like, why wouldn't Danielson pop on the screen and be like, whoa, Darby, I heard what you're saying right now. I just want to be clear. I am going to be at this upcoming pay-per-view. We're going to have our match. Man, I'm not – because right now –
You think he's zooming into Tony Khan from home with like a bag over his head still?
Right now it kind of looks like Danielson screwed over Darby Allin and let Darby Allin screw himself out of his title shot.
Yes. He's doing stupid babyface stuff. And then the one that got me was him looking, have you been drinking again? Great baby face line to bring up the heels rehab. Struggle with substance abuse. Good job on you, Darby. You jerk.
The impetus for Moxley's heel turn.
Your mother's a whore.
Your mother's a whore. Well, I mean, think about it. All of a sudden, Moxley's attitude's changed. He's walking around with a strange woman. Seems to have a different demeanor. Is he a drinking again?
Yes. You in the hangman stash over there? What happened there?
Yeah, he's walking around with a woman. It's not his wife. What is going on
here?
His
wife's backstage still.
Yeah.
Anybody ask here about this? Hey, Renee. Hey, John's over here hanging out with Marina Shafir. What do you think about that?
The thing with a lot of the stuff that
we've used their marriage in a storyline before. It's not like there's a separation there. We've actually used it.
Right. The thing with AEW so often, and it's just this recurring thing, is that if you stop and really think on any of these angles that feel good in the moment, you start having like these very weird like disconnects where understanding the angle better helps you understand the angle less.
Yes.
They make less sense as you process it.
But everybody will create this fan fiction in their head of this being like some sort of great storytelling
that,
or something that like
is, that. That is a need to square a circle, though.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like that is truly a need to connect disconnecting disparate parts to try to make it all make sense.
The Outrunners got a hell of a pop in that gauntlet match at the end. And I saw nobody else bring this up other than my co-host on the other show, so I'm going to say it for this. It's not that the Outrunners are more over. They're over, and they're a good mid-card tag team, and, you know, if they got a little bit better in the ring, you could give them a win and eventually push them into a title match where they lose and then eventually elevate them upward and onward instead of, like, hot-shotting the belts like you did on the Acclaimed. But they're actually from OVW, which is in the area. So they got a hometown pop, and I saw nobody else bring this up as the reasoning. Everybody else was thinking, oh, the Outrunners are so over. I'm like, dude, I love the Outrunners. I do love those dudes, but
it's just, yeah, people around there know them and they're
people
happy
around
to
there
see
know
guys.
Them and they're happy to see them. Yeah, that's it. Anything NXT you want to bring in?
Man, NXT continues to be kind of like a dud show to me.
I was enjoying it, but every match was the match starts, somebody interferes,
I'm
we throw just, out the match. It's like, oh, okay, great.
I'm over Charlie Dempsey with this Heritage Cup. It's just like, and Javon Evans once again comes up short in another high-profile match.
What the hell? Why are we beating this kid so much? Unless he's turning on Cedric Alexander.
It's weird. It's like, okay, at once, I feel this kid is not ready for this yet. He needs to, you know, kind of get it together more and everything. So I'm at once not having a problem with him not being a champion, but I just find myself begging the question, why is he in matches like this when what he should be in right now is little enhancement matches where he goes up against a heel each week and it's essentially a little skit match where the heel has one strategy and he's the roadrunner to their coyote.
He's their version of Daniel Garcia, really. He keeps getting these title matches and they keep beating him and they keep saying what a great young talent he is. And by the time you get around to him being like an older talent, he's going to have no value whatsoever because he's been beaten every time he gets into a big match.
And we'd never see him do his thing. You know, WCW back like 95, 96, like was fairly decent about having cruiserweight guys like Dean Malenko or Ultimo Dragon still have squash matches so that you understood what their type of match style was. And a guy like Javon Evans, even though he's a mid-card guy, should be having squash matches on this card with guys who like are not necessarily Hank and Tank, but guys who are the size of Hank and Tank, where you're like, oh man, this guy's absolutely going to crush Javon Evans. And maybe like Javon Evans does get hit with a clubbering blow once. And then Evans does something off the top rope that's absolutely incredible. Big guy's off his feet. He's outside the ring like, what the hell just happened to me? And then Evans comes in for the win. Rey Mysterio used to have matches like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, they used to do this all the time with him.
They used to actually have some of the luchadors actually have a squash match against a local, like you'd have like two Vianos and like La Parca against a guy on WCW Saturday Night. They, you know, just give them wins occasionally.
Yeah. Like, and that's what Javon Evans needs to be doing right now.
Yes.
And he needs to be doing this for like a year. This honestly should just be the thing we're used to the point where Javon Evans needs to be able to come out at the ripe old age of 21 and feel like he's on autopilot as he's going through these matches. Like, oh shit, another one of these. That's where we need to get him to, because right now in the ring, you can see the gears turning. You can see he needs to get to his little spots. He's the, you know, it's not the whole ring. There's little spots on the court that he knows how to play from. He's not a full complete wrestler yet.
Would a TV segment where Shawn Michaels comes to him and has a come to Jesus moment and says, look, kid, you've been going in all these title matches and coming up short. You're still a great champion. Why don't you keep your eyes off the prize for a little while? And go, you know, would that work, or would that be, would that work against him? Would that tell audiences that this guy's not any good? Because I've been thinking about this, and I don't know if that would be the right call or not.
What, I mean, I was going to say, if you had him in a tournament, that's fine, but then tournaments always end in title matches. They
yes.
Always, yeah, yeah. So then you're right back into the circle on that. But I'm trying to just think, how do you heat him up?
Dusty classic. You put him in a tag team with Cedric, and you let them
right.
Win.
Yeah, I mean, I think the move right now is downcycle him out of singles competition into a tag team, and then eventually cycle him out of the tag team into rehabilitation, doing enhancement matches and that sort of thing, and kind of getting his match. So it's a two-step process. Because no, you can't. I think he's reached the end of the road with what you can do with him right now as a singles guy. I don't see how you back the car up.
Yeah, and God knows. I mean, he might end up getting brought up in the next draft, and then he's just absolutely lost. He's Ricochet without, you know, the ring skill. Oh, by the way, hey, Ricochet had another match on Dynamite.
with the not-to-be-upstaged Sammy Guevara. Yes. It was funny hearing it was a better match. I'm like, well, yeah, because Sammy was at one point called one of the four pillars of this company and now has been relegated to enhancement talent status. So he's probably got a chip on his shoulder, plus he's Sammy Guevara, so you know he has a chip on his shoulder.
That, and also, he hasn't really been on mainstream Dynamite. He's been on pre-shows of these pay-per-views as a babyface, and he's been on Collision as a babyface. But to the Dynamite crowd, he's still kind of a heel in some way. So, yeah, I mean, this was a Sammy match. This was Sammy gets to get it. Sammy is like mini Brian Cage at this point. He gets to get his stuff in, and then it's like, well, what use of that is? Although I'm kind of here for Ricochet and Mortis, I really am. But at the same time, you're like, okay, cool.
Yeah, that's how I feel about that. You know, Ricochet needs a character. We know this about this guy.
Yes.
It's the match has never been the problem. It's the character and or the lack thereof.
Yeah.
He's never had one. And the only time he ever had a character was when he was nameless, faceless, or like faceless protagonist Prince Puma. And that was by virtue of him not speaking.
There was one thing on NXT that I loved, absolutely adored, and it's a minor thing, and it's kind of dumb, but I loved it. In all the pre-show stuff, where they're showing people walking through the parking lot to come into the building, every single shot had Jada Parker with that baseball bat somewhere in it. I howled at the continuity. I loved it, because it's like, oh, here's Julia getting ready, and there's just Jada with the baseball bat. Here comes, you know, whoever was coming in at the time. Jada is everywhere in that parking lot waiting for this toxic attraction. Or is it fatal attraction?
Fatal attraction, yeah.
It's not even fatal attraction. Fatal influence. Toxic influence. Fatal attraction.
Toxic close. Attraction. Yeah, I know. It's whatever.
Blech. They're such good wrestlers, and I can't take them. Should we go to a Vader Club?
Yeah, we can go to Vader Club.
You have something?
I was just like looking real quickly to see if there was anything else.
Let's see. Yeah, I'll give you that time.
Trick Williams becoming number one contender again. What are we doing here?
Meh.
I know. It's Ethan Page needs real people and real feuds and needs to really be trusted as the champion of this company.
Can we pause here for Ethan Page's? We talk about vibes and aura and stuff like that. Ethan Page's champion is the best champion in WWE, I think, possibly.
Ah, Gunther's pretty darn
good. Well, yeah, Gunther always comes out in Gunther gear, you know, the overcoat.
That's true.
Or whatever. I mean, the guy who looks like he's made some money making a championship. You know, the glasses, the button-down shirt, the nice clothes. He looks like a champion. He feels like a territorial wrestling champion, which is all I really want. You know,
yeah.
I get that WWE hates that stuff for the most part in terms of main roster. They just like having guys with their gear and their belts. You know, they never get to show off that, hey, this is the result of me being a champion. And, you know, we actually have a raised lifestyle as a champion, so to speak. I mean, the only time they did that was the Hurt Business, and that didn't last all that long either. Cody does it occasionally. I'll give it
I to just you. Want him to not be so campy
yes.
about it. I want him to have better material, but then part of it's also in the performance. He needs – like, I don't need him to say NX me. Like, we get it, dude. You're full of yourself. You don't need to, like...
Your nickname's all ego. We get
right?
it.
Right? Stop. Stop hitting me over the head with this. I get it. Like, your prickishness should drip through everything you do.
Although NXT does need more nicknames, because for every... Hey, we have an all-ego Ethan Page, which is an awesome nickname. You know, we don't have anything like the Walking Riot Missy Hyatt. We have Jasmine Nix. Okay. Sarah Carter.
But like, all ego Ethan Page should be able to establish that this guy's a dick by doing things like
yes.
opening. I used to work with a guy who every time I was in the break room, all of us in the break room, you couldn't stand near the door if he wasn't in there, because every time he comes in, he just swung the break room door open. So if you were in the way of it, you'd get walloped by that door. And his reaction would be like, shouldn't have been standing by the door.
You don't have like to tell that, me. You need to show me.
Right. Yeah. Ethan Page basically should just push his way through every door and occasionally hit people. Like, and he doesn't care because he's a dick.
More flair from like 86 or something like that with Shivani, where he's just coming out in the suit and the belt and going, it's a pleasure to be here in NXT as your champion, you know, whatever kind of a thing. That's what I'd like more.
A little bit of that too. Right. No, just mild condescension. I think the real trick to like pricks in real life, right, is they are pricks and they don't even realize it. At times
they don't care and they don't realize it.
Because they don't care about people, generally speaking, but there are times where they're being dicks and it's just automatic because
yes.
it's who they
are.
It's
a reflex. I've worked in Big Law. That's what all these guys are, the kind of guys who are trying to close the elevator door on staff floors because they don't want to ride down with the riffraff of any kind, you know, those types of people.
They're just when you stop them on there, like you'd actually point it out to them, and they might even go, huh, I guess that is a dick move. Huh. Like, that should be Ethan Page's characterization, not the mustache twisting.
Yes.
I am so arrogant. Indeed, I am Vainy McVainerson.
There's a joke there and I'm not gonna go there. Vader Club, Masa Saito, Shinya Hashimoto, and Koji Katao versus Big Van Vader, Bam Bam Bigelow, and Steve Williams. My god.
Dude, these dudes are all just specimens.
Koji Katao would later come on to be a Yokozuna in sumo, would be the only one not to win that championship. Masa Saito was the revelation to me in this match, because I know him as a mid-80s WWF jobber to the stars who they'd always say, oh, he used to be Mr. Fuji's tag team partner. But I was looking through his pro fight DB, and apparently in the early 90s, he just had a run of things that look like bangers in tag matches. And in this match, he was Taz. And this is me like being Shaq going, I need to apologize to you. I wasn't aware of your game. Because he's just chopping the crap out of people and suplexing belly to backs on Vader and Bigelow. And then that's not even, I mean, anytime Hashimoto and Steve Williams.
Hashimoto is fearless about leaving his damn feet. It's crazy.
That like, guy karate is awesome. Yeah.
Bro, like off the ropes when he does like those rolling wheel kicks. This is, I think, stuff maybe as an older wrestling fan, I have just way more of an appreciation. He hurls himself off his feet for a spinning wheel kick. There's no Vader. There's no break of the fall at all. It's just kerthud on the canvas. Like, jeez Louise.
Anytime Hashimoto and Williams are in there, though, Hashimoto's just kicking the crap out of Steve Williams. And Williams eventually just says, the hell with this. And all these matches are, I mean, all of this is around slamming the heels or slamming the gaijins here. Because Saito's coming in trying to body slam Vader, body slam Bigelow, body slam Williams. And these guys just beat the crap out of each other for 20 minutes, and I loved every moment of it.
Oh, yeah, this was great. I think this is a real joy of a multi-man match, and you get lots of different pairings. And this style, you weren't allowed to just take these type of matches off back in, like, 88, 90. You know what I mean? Like, you were expected to work.
Yeah, you're doing like a 3-week. You were doing like a 3-week tour of Japan, and you were working every night almost, or every other night, and you'd have these matches, and you worked hard in these matches because you got paid a lot, and then you'd go, you know, home for 6 months and relax or whatever. I mean, they're dropping people on their heads there.
the Vader and Hashimoto pairing is so good.
Yes,
I love Hashimoto working as Vader's underdog because he's big enough to where all of the offense looks credible, but undersized enough to where Vader always feels like he's got the ability to overpower him again.
Yeah, and this is Vader with his working boots on too. I mean, he is.
Oh, you're getting up for guys. He's stuff. Yeah, he's going up. Yeah,
and even Williams, who you know, I like Steve Dr. Death Williams. I don't love Steve Dr. Death Williams, but when he's motivated,
good, right? Yes, exactly.
When he's motivated Steve and Williams. he wants to be violent, he's great because it's just you know he'll just stiff the crap out of somebody, and it's like yeah, that looked like it hurt. You're gonna get it back, but man, there'd be kick battles from Hashimoto on Williams. I'd just be like going, damn, I think he might break his arm on the next one. Yeah, Shinya Hashimoto, a favorite here. Masa Saito, who was he chopping? In the court, was it Vader? He was having like a chop battle with Vader, yeah. Or was it Bigelow? Aegis, you just hear it and you go, because Saito at this point, I think it's like 46 or so. I mean, he's older and he's just like this miniature jacked up dude. In WWF, he never got a win. He got like one move in. His most famous thing in American wrestling is he's the guy who was with Ken Patera when Ken Patera decided to throw the rock through the McDonald's. Because it was closed. Yeah, he's, you know, I don't know if it's roids or not, but I think he was probably just eating steroids and roids.
I'm thinking it was roids. I mean, this man no at 46, neck. Neck. It's like Tomohiro Ishii, if Tomohiro Ishii was like a hyper-muscled version of Tomohiro Ishii.
I linked to this match in both our Discord and on the Shake Them Ropes X account. It's on Daily Motion if you want to look for it. It's just 20 minutes of bad guys doing bad things to each other, and it's friggin' great. But yeah, now all I can think of is Hashimoto spin kicks or rolling kicks.
Dude, the kid, him and Vader have just such a great synergy. Those kicks have such reckless abandon, and they probably hurt like hell. But it's Vader. So he had a decent pain tolerance. He was a bit of a whiner, but also would like potato you back, so you get your receipts. So
this is early. I think this is early in Vader's career, not later, but maybe I'm wrong on the year here.
This would be 90. So that's 90.
That's fair. That's two or three years.
That's 2 years into Vader. I mean, he's past Baby Bull Leon White at that point.
Yeah, because he'd been doing some of these Japan tours with a bunch of AWA guys like Wayne Bloom and Brad Riggins and stuff like that. They were having tours here. You look at some of these early 90s New Japan six-mans and stuff, you look at them, like he was teaming up, like Masahiro Saito was teaming up with like Chris Benoit and stuff, and like as Wild Pegasus in a few matches and stuff. You're reading all these things, and I wish I had video of all these, and I don't know if New Japan has it upload on their thing, but like all this early 90s multi-tags, I think, and they were just like house show / tag league type things. They're great. Maybe you can find a Hashimoto Vader match for next week or whatever you want to do next week, Chris.
No, I might try to dig something like that up. We'll see where my wild hairs take me on this.
Let's end the show there. You can follow me at CrapGame13 on X. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word, only on X. Chris is on Instagram at DOCTOR_NOV and also on Spotify under Chris Novembrino. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I also do a show over on Fight Game Media on Wednesday nights after Dynamite, about 20 minutes. Myself and Paul Fontaine do the Dynamite show on YouTube. That drops in your podcatchers for free on Thursday mornings. Would appreciate a listen on that. Chris, get your plugs in.
Oh, man, please go and check out my Spotify. Thank you so much to everyone who has over this last month. I have been surprised with the level of engagement with the Spotify. If you haven't checked it out, go on Spotify. My name, Chris Novembrino. You will see over the weekend here, I will be dropping the single edit of what apparently is the biggest numbers song on there, Out of My Mind. So if you want to hear the rough EP edit of it, please go and check that out now. And then go and check out the single edit, which will presumably be up on Spotify probably sometime early next week.
Is that about your neighbors?
No. Like, the song's older than that, but it honestly, I mean, the first line's like, I was staring at the walls and they were closing in. And my neighbors have certainly ported that experience onto me in a very vivid way. I have found some of the words that I have written for some of these songs have picked up different meanings as I've recorded these songs, written at one time, recorded at another.
More HOA updates next week.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Garrett Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I'm also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.